One thing that you can't discount is that the affluent, privileged ones have no one to tell them no, right? In other words, they have the sort of the social clout to be able to engage in performances that other people in other contexts might be sort of, someone's going to tell them not to do it. I mean, I say this in the book, like, sometimes things are stigmatized for a reason, right? So I'm sure this, you're going to be thrilled that this is coming up in this conversation. Look at gooning, right? Like the like the gooning culture.
You know,
right?
I was waiting for us to get to that.
So
okay.
If you look at like gooning,
finally,
right? Like, like, look, a little bit of masturbation never hurt anybody, right? Men masturbate. It's a thing that happens. But like, it used to be understood to be somewhat shameful and embarrassing. Mm. And that shame and that embarrassment acted as a check on not becoming the kind of guy who has a special room just for masturbation and who live streams his masturbation, right? In other words, the internet acts as this permission machine, and it just sort of says, hey, look, here's these other people who have the exact same impulses that you do, ergo what you're doing.
There are no limits. There are no limits to your narcissism. And this is, you know, getting back to like being trad, we keep criticizing the patriarchy, but one of the functions, I mean, I know you're not sympathetic to Freud, but I am, is that we need to have someone who says no, and psychoanalytically, that person is the father. Because every child is so deeply connected to a caretaker, mother figure, and you're in this like infantile specularity. The third, you could say that is a third term, the patriarch or father. It doesn't have to be male necessarily, but some, the third term is the social term that says to the child, no, you can't sleep with your mother. No, and someone who says, no, you can't masturbate all the time. No one wants to say no. You can see this in classrooms. Like, you can see this with students. Like, no one has actually said no to them. No one actually can sometimes say, the richer you are, the more you go to schools where no one says no to you. Oh, no. Or no one says, you are wrong.
Yeah, yeah. The students and are so paying $50,000.
So, the teachers
pay $5,000.
So the question
five.
Is, like, we need hard stops. We need prohibitions. We need interdictions. I'm going to give you this crazy example. I talked to an artist. I will not name where I talked to them, but they were like, you know, working in an installation or a community-based thing. And I was talking about universalisms. And they were like, no, you know, I don't think anything is universal. And
oh,
I said,
boy. Oh,
do you
boy.
Think there's no universal taboo on incest? He goes, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe there's place. I was like, oh, really? Do you think there are cultures where it's okay to sleep with your mother and father and sleep with their siblings, like maybe in ancient Egypt? He goes, yeah, maybe that could happen. Like, he would not admit that there were certain universal human taboos. I didn't even talk about cannibalism. Mm. Like, there's actually a universal taboo on eating human flesh. Mm. I mean, the relativism of these, like,
except
crazy—
except for the Epstein class.
Adrenochrome. Yeah. I mean, this all goes back to Q.
That's
the answer.
So here's the frazzle drip.
This might be kind of funny. Is a friend of mine. It's the wife of a friend of mine. But she works for a expensive, fancy private middle school. The kind of place that is like simultaneously like kind of blue blood and stuck up, but also very progressive. They call themselves an independent day school or whatever.
They're like Epstein used to teach.
Right, and they have these like progressive values, whatever. Anyway, there was a project from some of her students in class, and they were grumbling about the project and how hard it was. And she said, just offhand, not thinking it was a big deal to say, she said, look, kids, you know, doing things you don't want to do is a big part of life. And apparently the students were like, what? What are you saying? Like, how dare you say that? And like, okay, kids are stupid, right? But then a couple of days later, she got called to the principal's office and a parent had complained. The principal wouldn't say which parent it was. Yep. And the parent and the principal said, you can't tell these kids that they have to do things that they don't want to do in life. I think one thing that unites what Catherine is doing in her book and what I'm doing in my book is at a certain point, the therapeutic culture and the self-help culture that we have, it becomes so self-parodic that you're in a space in which you cannot tell people that like there is something unhealthy about what you're doing. And sometimes a little stigma, a little shame, a guilt, sometimes those things are necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think civilization is built on the ability for us to repress some of our worst instincts. And right now there's a culture of permission around like American upper middle class liberalism that says like there is no necessary. And it's horrific, actually. And I think that the whole explosion of trad world is about people, communities trying to create prohibitions in a world where they haven't ever seriously confronted a limitation to their desires, to their sort of empty hedonism.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the end of decadence for all ruling classes, is the no limit. I mean, this is how the Roman Empire fell too. This is how Christianity came up against paganism. It takes us back to Epstein, though. Epstein is someone who was working class, aspired to the elites, and thought, when I get to a certain level of power, I will be in a position where no one will say no to me. Mm. And that was his thing. Like, whether he was abusing a young woman or a Harvard professor, he managed to exert his power over them. And I don't think that this is the end of class struggle to take down Epstein, but I think that that is what elites want: impunity.
Let's do a few topical things in the news right now.
Let's cheer ourselves up with something more light.
I'm going to steer us into some recent news stories. Did you see this thing in the New York Times? There's a young woman. She's not young anymore. When she was 16, she has all of these emotional damages from YouTube and Meta and Facebook, and they just won this lawsuit. Mm. She's 20 years old now. She's anonymous, not named in the piece, but it is opening up class action lawsuits against these platforms. Mm. What are your thoughts on this story?
I mean, I think that people in our generation, my generation, were guinea pigs in a very unregulated experiment about sort of directly trying to manipulate the human brain and its addictive properties. I mean, when people deny that there are sort of any sort of addictive elements to social media, I remind them, giant companies spent billions of dollars to make you click thing and watch for longer. I mean, these corporations are paying people an immense amount of money to ensure that people stay on their app as long as they possibly can. And I just think that it's naive to assume that we're not sort of feeling the effects of that. Whether these lawsuits are the right way to fix that, or if we just need to go out and start bombing the server farms, we'll have to wait and see.
Well, so there's an analogy here to be made between the industrial food ways and what has happened with regard to artificial flavors and processed foods. Okay. You know, Michael Pollan and that whole sort of Berkeley crew, those new left counterculture hippies, really did an incredible job of exposing, with Robert Kenner in Food Inc., the ways in which artificial flavoring was addictive and which processed foods were really destructive. I actually do think that, at least in California, the regulation of processed foods and artificial flavors really went into overdrive. So this sort of vanguard food critic ends up exposing the food industry for what it is, and an elite, sort of upper middle class, college educated population adopts these consumption practices, rejecting these industrial food products. I don't know if you remember this, but Pollan said, "Shop the outside of supermarkets." Did you read this?
What's on the outside of the
supermarkets?
So
it's all like bread, produce, fruit, milk products. Don't shop the inside of the supermarket because that's where all the processed foods are.
It's not refrigerated. It's in a can or it's on the shelf.
It was just like, and Robert Kenner wrote, made that documentary, Food Inc. It was a little bit like exposing. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like the anti-tobacco campaign in its sort of popular effectiveness. And I think these lawsuits are creating that kind of consciousness within upper middle class populations. And what we are going to see, I think, is like a kind of the adoption of more in real life Luddite practices, but among elites, among college educated elites. And so at the same time that we have, you know, Pollan creating it in the carnivore's dilemma, all this consciousness among educated people about proper ways of eating and rejecting processed foods, we have massive food deserts in most of the country mm-hmm. where you can't mm-hmm. get a fresh vegetable or a fresh fruit. And you have all of these, so you have like continuous polarization, and the agricultural and the food industries, like they will adapt. Like they'll adapt to this new configuration. Like there will be more in real life things that will, maybe there'll be the adoption by, you know, the educated elites of dumb phones or, you know, more high contact experiences. And what you do is just leave everyone else behind to be addictive. Like 60 Minutes 15 years ago ran an expose of this flavor company called Givaudan in Switzerland.
Okay.
Where they basically admitted they make most of the molecules that people put into perfumes and artificial flavor. And Maury mm-hmm. Schaefer, whatever his name is, got them to admit on camera that they were synthesizing tastes that would leave you wanting more.
Yeah.
Which is the endorphin rush of social media is too. And he goes, so you're saying this artificial flavor is addictive. And the scientists were just elated. They were like, yes, we're saying it's addictive. Yes, it leaves you wanting more. And one thing you can see about these practices of artificially flavored soda water is that it's very hard in an average American supermarket to find a plain water. Find water that doesn't have a special flavor. Mm-hmm. Because that special flavor is a synthetic molecule that keeps you wanting more. But you know, if you go to elite supermarkets or like in rich neighborhoods, you'll find like Perrier, Pellegrino, you'll find smart water. You'll find waters with no flavor because we realize that these are bad for us. But we're going to have this two-tiered system of media consumption that's going to arise, I think, out of these legal battles. And what is happening, it happened with television too, that there was like the junky television, then there's prestige television, and then there's streaming television, and people who are, you know, have discerning tastes are only watching HBO or whatever. But what it creates is just more differentiation within social media companies. And if you really, and you know what Freddie said about bombing those data centers, like if you really want to make them hurt,
guys,
it is about taking down the infrastructure. I'm anti-violence.
In Minecraft.
I did not endorse.
We're not endorsing any kind of corporate sabotage.
I'm not saying that anyone should blow up the server farms. I'm just saying the only way to save the human race is to blow up the server farms.
Okay. On that note, follow the show on Spotify, Patreon, Substack. Okay.
Thanks for listening. This is an independent show. If you like this content, you can help to show your support by subscribing and leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can support the show on Substack or Patreon. Find me on socials at Joshua Citarella. This is a listener-supported show. I don't do any advertising, so your support is really what keeps this project going. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.
Greetings, you Netflix one.